Welcome back to the Birthlink podcast. I just finished recording one actually with amazing doula Kim, and I'm really excited to get that edited. That probably won't be coming out until December. That's how it usually rolls. I have a few in the queue that I am editing out and that need to be released because I do this every other Monday because of my own availability, what I can put into this podcast. It's just every other Monday right now. I know I had mentioned that I can do the little shorts and stuff, and that's still in my mind, and I still want to. But I record and edit on and everything on Fridays usually, and my daughter is in school for 6 hours, so I get 6 hours to do everything, and recording everything every week is tough still, but I really want to. And now that I'm doing more of the YouTube, so I'm out in front of a video and camera, I don't know, maybe I'll get more used to it. But let me first introduce who our guest is going to be today in this video. If you are in fertility, if you love acupuncture, if you are interested in PTSD and how it all correlates, then you are not going to want to miss this episode. So then keep watching because I have invited Nicole Ling onto the podcast, and she has been in the world of acupuncture and thought. She's a thought leader, right? She's pioneered this, and she has been working in trauma informed fertility since 2006. So I was so honored to have her and pick her brain. I just love doing this for that reason. I'm glad you're here listening in as well, because you will get so much out of it. But personally, wow, I absolutely loved this episode. I tried recording in a different location just to see the aesthetics of it. It was a lot of work for me to get that all put together, but it's kind of fun, something new. But Nicole, I'm just going to read her little bio real quick. She's leading the conversation around the shocking reality that nearly 50% of people in fertility treatment develop PTSD. So that's where this all connects. Right. So regardless of whether they get pregnant or not, women are going to through fertility treatments and they're paying the prices, and it's not just monetarily wise. So if you're going through it right now, if you're in the thick of it and this is hard, we get into my fertility journey a little bit in this episode, and I really appreciated that. But you can see that even though I never actually got to the IVF point, just my fertility journey and getting pregnant naturally took it out of me. So I can completely understand and relate, and I get it that if then you didn't get pregnant after all that work, especially if you put the money and time and energy into IVF, like what does that do to us as women and families and partners? So Nicole's revolutionary salutogenesis approach focuses on preventing treatment-induced trauma while improving conception odds through her evidence-based integration of nervous system science and traditional Chinese medicine. So if you're a big fan of Chinese medicine, acupuncture, holistic care, and then throwing in the science and all that talk, I think you're going to really love this one. So I won't keep you anymore. Let's get into this episode. Welcome to the Birthlink Podcast, presented by My Friend's a Nurse. I'm your host, Colette McCulliker, a high-risk labor and delivery nurse right here in sunny California. I'm also an OB-certified specialist, birth educator, lactation expert, and mother of two beautiful daughters. I am passionate about guiding you through the miraculous journey of pregnancy and childbirth, using evidence and history and asking the reason why. I have some incredible medical friends and colleagues, and we're all here to help you navigate this often overwhelming birthing hospital system in the United States. My goal is to gain trust in birth, improve this system, and provide some valuable insights. Let's make this journey a little less daunting and a lot more joyful. Let's get into it. Welcome to the podcast, Nicole. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm so excited to have you. I was really looking forward to this conversation because I really haven't spoken to anyone about it. When it comes to fertility and the struggles we have with, you know, just mentally getting around
the struggles that we may have gone through to get to that point of pregnancy. And sometimes it comes with unwanted feelings like shame or guilt or anger, the trauma that is involved that could have possibly involved leading up to that or maybe previous. So I haven't been able to talk about this conversation. So just to have you on, I am so excited. Me too. So, you know, this is why I love having this podcast, because I can kind of just like, hey, this is cool. I want to talk to you. And then I have a little way to get you in to have a conversation with me, which I really love. So welcome. Please tell us first, what got you into birth work, into this world of fertility and pregnancy and women's healthcare?
Yeah. So it was by way of trauma and fertility work first. So I got into trauma-informed women's health because I was looking to help myself. And I had gone as far as Western medicine would take me, which was great and a huge help. But then I kind of plateaued. And so that's what brought me to Chinese medicine and to get my master's degree in acupuncture. And by the time I started school, I had come off birth control pills, which were for terrible, floody, turns out endo-y periods, and hadn't gotten my period back for 2 years. And so through school, I was working on women's health and trying to figure out my own hormonal imbalances and cycle. And I had a history of trauma, which was really a big thing in my nervous system. And so, of course, now I know, looking back, all the ways that these things are interconnected. But I had stomach aches, and I had period issues, and I had anxiety, and I had panic attacks, and I had sleep issues. And so I was looking at treating these things all together for the first time, which was fabulous and amazing with Chinese medicine. And so by the time I graduated, I had gotten my period back and I was feeling a lot better. And I was like, this is all I want to do. I've really gone deep into these areas. And so I said, I'm going to turn away any other patients that aren't in this sort of realm of work. And I told my husband, I'll take a part-time job if I need to, but this is what I want to do, at least to start, give it a try. And I've had a wait list for 18 years. I've been in practice since 2006. And I just love it. And then when I'm working with fertility, a lot of fertility work came out of that, because trauma and hormonal women's health really leads into a lot of fertility concerns. I started seeing people through pregnancy, and I got to go to some births and support people and see some of my family members and friends and a couple patients. And so I learned more and more about birth just by way of following that natural progression. So I feel so honored that I've gotten to see any babies born. And then I have my own two, which was a home birth and one was a water birth at a lovely, very holistic hospital with a midwife. And they were both great and both involved hemorrhages and intensity too.
The body keeps the score, right?
Sure does.
Yep. So you think you're going to get away from it, but it sooner or later it creeps up in one way or another, whether it's a stomach ache or PTSD anxiety attacks or whatever.
Kind of in all the ways, I think. The more holistic I get, it's like, oh yeah, that's that and that's that and that's that. And it's so great not to have to play that whack-a-mole game of thinking about them separately. It's like we can get to the root of a lot of this all together.
Right. Well, first thing I want to talk about is let's leave the trauma for the next topic.
Yep.
I want to get into that and how it transforms for our fertility journey and pregnancies and births and parenthood. But let's really dive in a little bit into acupuncture during fertility, because I specifically went through acupuncture when I was having, you know, I went through a year of trying, had two miscarriages, and I was 39 years old. So I knew I wasn't going, you know, I wasn't a spring chicken anymore. And so I was like, okay. So much pressure. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I didn't want to do, I was like, no, I'm healthy. I had a baby before. I know I can do this. This is a new husband. Right. And I said, he really wanted a baby. I'm like, I can do it. I can have a baby.
Sure.
No problem. I can do that. I did it before. No problem. So, you know, it's like maybe the pressure of it. And I went.
And the logistics of being 39 is real.
Yeah, there's, well, tell that to me. After I was still 19 in
back
my
up.
Head. You know,
I'm like, up.
Hold up, who's look at me?
Yeah,
I'm so you know, whatever. We're
super
still
fertile.
Live in this. Super fertile. What are you talking about? And I ended up doing after the miscarriages, you know, I was like, okay, well, we should go talk to someone. And I got my labs drawn and did my AMH was low, obviously. Mm-hmm. But they still kind of said, no, you can do this naturally if you want to. And I'm like, mm-hmm. okay, cool. Well, then after the second miscarriage, I said, stop everything. Mm-hmm. I need to totally reset. So first thing I did was find an acupuncturist.
Okay.
That specialized in fertility. Yeah. Lovely. And I don't know why. I just said, I got to try it all. And fortunately, she introduced me to Fertility Friend and tracking mm-hmm. and Chinese herbs. So I got into it all. I was like, give it to me. I'm going to do everything right now. Because when I go into anything, I go hard.
Yep.
Like full force. So I was reading, you know, it starts with the egg, and then I was taking all the supplements and the herbs and totally changed my diet. So it was very nutrient rich. And, you know, I was exercising moderately, doing mm-hmm. hot and cold therapy. I was doing breath work.
You were doing it
meditation.
All.
Girl. I was seed cycling. Waking up at 5 a.m. every day to take my temperature, checking my cervical, everything, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know what helped, but I know for a fact that I really enjoyed my acupuncture and sessions. I went once a week. It was a time for me to lay there and just get away from the world, imagine my little baby inside, like welcoming her into my womb. And I was just, you know, got to kind of just breathe. And I really tried to use everything I was learning during that period. But we literally saw my temperature, my basal temperature start increasing because it was very, very low. It was like 96 something. So yeah. I was wearing socks everywhere. I was staying warm. My body wants to be warm, but there was some kidney stuff. I know I'm just like going on in my stories, but
you got it.
Just so everyone knows that acupuncture,
yeah.
I literally saw the numbers go up, and I'm sure it was also my diet and my lifestyle, but I think acupuncture really, really helped. And my pregnancy was very smooth. I'm prone to migraines and sciatica, mm-hmm. nothing in my pregnancy. The labor was really quick and 8 minutes of pushing and postpartum was great. And I was like, I did do a lot of acupuncture.
I queued it up.
Yeah. So that story being told, can you please tell me what
there's so much
really did for me?
I mean, we could have two podcasts just breaking down what you just shared. So thank you for that.
I know. Sorry.
No, I love it. That's the beauty of once you're holistic. It's like, oh, so many ideas, so many things. So you're asking about acupuncture. So I'm going to start there so that my brain doesn't go in 50 different directions. So acupuncture, I'm a very sciencey acupuncturist, first and foremost. So I was originally going to study genetics before I had my own upheaval. So there is the kind of classic, like we're unblocking chi and meridians where the chi, the energy flows, and that's all very lovely. And Chinese medicine predates dissection and anatomy and physiology. And so there's this observation-based nature of it that just connects the dots and comes up with very nature-based ways of explaining it. But now we're in this moment where we can do things like look at Doppler studies of pelvic blood flow and look at fMRIs of what's happening in the brain. And so what acupuncture is really great for fertility is it really resets the hypothalamic pituitary ovarian axis, and it reduces cortisol. It regulates the way that the hypothalamus speaks to the pituitary gland and releases hormones that then influence the ovaries. And by resetting the nervous system out of fight or flight, which it's so common to hear people doing, I'm doing everything, but I talk about it being the baby blinders, where if you're just doing everything and you don't have any place where it feels safe, like on an acupuncture table, and you're just like, I'm just reading and taking and doing and trying, that's a lot of threat in your nervous system still. So it's really nice to put that acupuncture in there. And your face just lit up when you were talking. You had this like kind of far off look for your acupuncture look when
so
you were telling
good.
That part of the story. And that's what it does.
She was amazing.
That's what it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So when we insert that safety, then that can let the other things show up in bigger ways, because it's like, you know, it's okay. You're not just putting in good nutrients in a way that feels very much like doing. You're putting in good nutrients and then you're resetting the sort of baseline to this felt safety, this regulated, this in rest, digest, and reproduce mode. So some of the things that we can quantify now with acupuncture are we can look at these Doppler studies and say that the pelvic blood flow that goes to the ovaries and the uterus are more smooth and consistent after we do acupuncture, especially a series of electrostimulation treatments is the best studied for this. And we can look at fMRI brain activity and see that when we put in nervous system regulating trauma-informed acupuncture points, we can watch the brain go black on an fMRI in all sorts of places. So I tell my patients, it's like, I'm going to close all the tabs and restart your browser for your nervous system. So it turns black in all these areas that we're lit up and thinking. And truly, it constantly amazes me, because I'll be in with the person and we'll be processing really intense stuff, lack of control, lack of knowing how this ends, trauma. And all of a sudden I put the needles in and their brain goes black. And then the brain waves that continue, we can look at brain wave analysis and see that it changes into the kind of brain waves that kids and really good meditators can hang out in. And so we can be in this really intense processing, which is for me part of the treatment, to do the talking and the education and the processing. A lot of acupuncturists don't do that. I'm a hybrid with the trauma informed kind of Western stuff here. Then they hop up on the table and it just downshifts. And when I come in, I always say the way that you can tell that this is happening is I'll say I'm going to leave you for 30 minutes. And you might think, okay, this is going to feel like forever. I have stuff. Oh my gosh, 30 minutes. Can I have my phone? And then I come back in and they're like, no, that wasn't 30 minutes. That felt like 5 minutes. Are you kidding me? And it's like, no, I actually left you for 35 minutes. That was 40 minutes. And that's your brain just shutting off and resetting. So you have that. Some of the things that we also know about acupuncture now is some of the best studies on acupuncture for fertility are looking at something called whole systems acupuncture and comparing it to protocols. This is harder to get studies on because it's very individualized. I say we want these sort of controlled, peer-reviewed studies, but it's really hard to do with acupuncture because one person craves heat and is cold all the time and was maybe already a vegetarian and, you know, is really driven. And then the other person is 39 and has low AMH, but they're, you know, hot flashing and they are, you know, more, they exercise so they don't have as many symptoms, but they really rely on exercise a lot. And so the way that we would treat them is very different. And so whole systems acupuncture is just like, we're going to treat you as a person. Oh, you have a migraine today? Let's treat the migraine as part of your fertility treatment. Oh, you're worried about, you know, the seed cycling is appealing, but you don't really understand it and it feels a little overwhelming. Let's talk about if that's worth doing or not and how that's actually landing in your body and nervous system. And so when you add all that together, we have a 13% increase in live birth rates with that kind of acupuncture support for people going through fertility, which is remarkable because that's not pregnancy rates, that's live birth rates, which is, of course, what everybody really cares about.
Well, I mean,
it's a lot.
I'm like, just lost. No, I love it because I feel it. Like even that part where you say you kind of disassociate a little bit from reality and time. And that's so true. My acupuncturist was my like confidant, I called her. Like I went in and I valued those 15 minutes that we just spoke. Yeah. I can share my thoughts, my fears, my, you know, life with her, what's going on with my husband. So she really wanted to know. So she was very much like you, where she spent that time really talking to me. She wanted me to send my chart to her. So she reviewed it before she came in. I just felt very seen more than I even did with the reproductive endocrinologist. Like she just knew, like she wanted to really get to know me and what I was going through. And then she'd say, okay, come on the table. And she just, then she would ask, you know, like I would say, like, I have a little sinus, you know, congestion or, you know, a little headache or whatever. And so she would just add a couple of needles where she needed to. And yeah, I definitely disassociated. I think because I was very, like I made a conscious decision to do that. So you know, I was practicing meditation outside of the bed, right? Because I knew that how important that was to just regulate my nervous system, because of all that pressure.
Yeah.
And, you know, doing all the things is so hard, especially when like friends around me are getting pregnant and I'm just like, oh, is this ever going to happen? And why is this happening? Why can't I just get pregnant? He's fine. His numbers were fine, you know, but he's also taking, you know, his vitamins and getting sleep and not drinking. And he's doing everything he, but what about me? So to just meditate and spend that time, then that once a week for 45 minutes, because she did 45 minutes on me, I would just lay there and meditate. And I would just go, just, it was so amazing. I could feel parts of my body get warm. Stuff was happening for sure. And, you know, I have this beautiful daughter to look at and pat myself on the back. Like,
I love that.
I don't know what it was, but I know acupuncture was great. And I can see it being really great because of those. I can't imagine going through fertility.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't do IVF. Mm-hmm. I was this close to it, like literally 2 weeks away from submitting my stuff before I found out I was pregnant and COVID hit. Oh my God.
That's another layer.
Oh, thank God. Okay. But I can't imagine without the meditation, but especially the acupuncture, just having someone to speak to and now learning the scientific part of it. I'm like, that makes so much sense. I knew it without knowing it.
Yeah. And you don't have to. That's back to that observation based, right? We don't have to have the brain scans. We don't have to have the Doppler studies. Mm-hmm. But isn't it, I say it's sort of like if somebody locked you in a modern house and you didn't understand how electricity or light switch, it's like you can flip a light switch and be like, well, obviously that does that. A thermostat's a little bit more subtle. Acupuncture is a little bit more like a thermostat than a light switch. But if you watch, it's like, okay, that really does that. And so now what these studies are showing is sort of the behind the scenes, the duct work and the blower motor and the pilot light and the things that are happening. But we never had to understand that. We could just make these observation-based things and trust the body's ability and wisdom and how powerful things like the nervous system and just feeling safe can be for everything from digestion to headaches to fertility.
It's amazing. Yeah, I can see it. I refer as a resource, like acupuncture, try it, along with everything else. I feel like it's a collaborative, if you're just eating McDonald's every day and you're sleeping whenever you want and then you do acupuncture, like, okay, good luck.
Yeah.
I think it has to be kind of along with everything, but let's get into then, you know, the fertility part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it's associated with maybe untapped trauma or PTSD, infertility care.
Yeah.
And how maybe acupuncture, but maybe let's just talk about in general, because you were working in like the fertility arena and noticing how trauma affected it. Maybe we can dive into a little bit about that and what you saw and where women are seeking help and how it can transition into the pregnancy and what you find, like, especially with women that maybe are struggling to get pregnant and now they're through IVF and they've, you know, spent $100,000 or $20,000 is a lot. And, you know, what it's doing with their marriage and to their partners and their home. And then what happens when they finally get pregnant and now, you know, the emotions that go along with that. Let's dive in a little bit. Where would you like to start?
Just again,
sorry, I'm the worst host.
No, ever. I love it.
Let me list all the topics.
No, I think I have a place to start. I think so I think what I heard to start was this idea of prior trauma and then also trauma that comes from the fertility experience. Pregnancy losses, the actual treatments, the lack of control, because there is
the
a real trauma there.
It could be from a previous,
like
trying to get pregnant the first time was really hard. And now thinking about like me, we wanted to have a second. The thought of having to do all of that again was like a really big weight on my shoulders. And I said, I don't think I can. That was so much. So we paused on it, but yeah. You know, you've gone through it before. Maybe you had a traumatic birth. Maybe you had SA when you were younger, like leading up to the fertility. How do women approach it?
So I think we live in a culture that is very siloed when it comes to anything in healthcare. So we've siloed mental health from physical health since the 1600s. Before that, it was really immersed, and it's starting to get put back together because of the evidence that they're one and the same and they're totally interconnected. But we've had this big period of the majority of modern Western medicine where we've separated the mind from the body. And so we've been told either one of two things, I think, when it comes to trauma: that's separate, doesn't matter, or that's ruining your fertility. It's terrible. I'm stressed about my stress, traumatized about my trauma, depressed about my depression, all of that.
And they always say, just stop thinking about it.
Right, just relax, go on vacation.
Stop all that stuff.
Yeah,
you're
like
doing.
You can do you'll that. Like just press a button and turn off your brain. if there was a point to that, that's all I would have to do. So where I land with it is whether it's prior trauma from childhood ACEs or assault or relational abuse, neglect, poverty, people that are marginalized and not as well served by society. There's so many layers. Or it's during the fertility with pregnancy losses and treatments. We try to find a middle ground, a third option. So instead of like, it doesn't matter, it's separate, go to a therapist for that, or it's everything, it's ruining your fertility. The middle ground is it is a piece of the puzzle. And depending on how big of a piece it is in your lived history and your nervous system, it might be a really important piece. It might be a side piece. It might be a very limited piece, but it is something that we need to look at and explore and learn how to relate to in healthy ways, how to work with in the ways that we can, how to be compassionate for the ways that we can't, and set realistic expectations that we don't need to be perfect to get pregnant. We would be extinct if that were required. No one would ever have an IVF pregnancy if we had to be totally zen. That's just not how this works. And so finding that sweet spot of like moderation, feeling empowered, feeling engaged, but also not giving ourselves more power than we really should have, understanding that it's still a complicated biological condition. Right. And that's so common. And you know, you saying I have my beautiful daughter, it worked. And also, I don't know that I could do that again, speaks to these layers that I'm really passionate about trying to call out and change. Because a lot of that is unnecessary PTSD from having zero context, from not feeling safe within that process. I see it on your, that lives there. And it's such a big deal. And there is a part of the process that is traumatic and complicated medicine. It's like having cancer. But the problem with fertility culture in particular is that there's so much misinformation, myth thinking, magical thinking, shame, blame, lack of context, lack of good research, even. Like, even if we wanted it, there's so much that it's like, well, we're only just starting to study this because we didn't mandate that we had to study people with ovaries and hormones until the mid-90s. And so we don't have data. We're just like, oh yeah, the placenta, we shouldn't just throw that out. That actually sets up the pregnancy. And so, you know, we want to find that spot. I talk about it in percentages. I like the idea of salutogenesis is a term that a psychologist came up with after World War II. He was studying Holocaust survivors and why some people were still able to thrive and be healthy and others weren't. And the idea of salutogenesis is that there's about 25% of our experience that is pathology and reductionistic things that need to be figured out and troubleshot and worked with. And Western medicine is really great at that. But then there's 75 is my percentage, 80% is salutogenesis that I say it's, you know, your foundation. So I say the part of for fertility, the part that you're troubleshooting, that 25% of pathology, I call it the nursery. So the nursery is where you want to move the baby, and you want the hormones, you want the lining, you want the sperm, you want the good blood flow. But then 25% is your felt sense of safety. That's your foundation. and your regulation of your nervous system. And then another 25% is your body resourced and abundant? And is it reasonable for it to say yes to a pregnancy because you can digest and assimilate food, because you're not in pain all the time, because you can sleep well, you can reset your body? And then another 25% is relational, because a big part of us have evolved to be part of community and have safety. And especially post-COVID, there's this loneliness and this isolation and this going at it on our own. And we don't put that back into fertility. So when we put, I call that the neighborhood plus the house, which is the whole body and mind, plus the foundation, which is, are you safe? Are you seen? Are you educated? And then we troubleshoot that 25% in my world is fertility, could be pregnancy specific things, could be postpartum specific things. That then shows up and works easier, faster, and in ways that don't leave people with as much PTSD. Because 46% of people have PTSD that go through fertility treatments, even if they have a baby. So like what you're talking about is just like unnecessary, complex PTSD from the nature of the culture and how backwards we have our ratios.
Right. Oh my gosh. You're absolutely right. And we have to think now, I want to talk about what we can do then. Let's be honest, there are so many couples that are going through IVF, mm-hmm. or even women that are saving their eggs, right? And they're mm-hmm. freezing their eggs because of the fear that they won't be able to get pregnant later. So then how can they early on as possible start coming up with solutions or programs or mm-hmm. reaching out or just understanding within what they have to work on? What would you say like to someone like me, if you met me back at the beginning?
My single biggest concept that I teach people is that a whole and abundant and resourced person is the most fertile. And the most fertile might still need IVF if they're 42 and they're trying to figure out what's genetically viable of their eggs, or doesn't have fallopian tubes because they've had ectopic pregnancies and lost their tubes. That's not to say that's the end all be all, but then that treatment that might be medically necessary for the nursery is going to work better, faster, with less PTSD, less lingering ongoing ripples in the person's life. And so that's my single biggest, is to just shift how we're thinking about it, instead of like, okay, I have to get online and order all the hormones and start the seed cycling. And is there enough zinc for my partner's sperm? And is there, you know, oh, I have to expose myself to sunlight first thing in the morning. And I have to, 7 hours of sleep is just right. 8.5 is too much. You know, you can get these studies that are proteins better, but only if it's free range organic, and full fat dairy is better. But I call that the baby blinders, where 100% or 80% of the focus is just nursery. And that's going to flip the rest of you into scarcity, into less resourced, less safe. So we've now really tried to pimp out a nursery in a way that the foundation is crumbling. A family of squirrels and raccoons have moved into your attic full of anxiety and depression and spinning. The bedroom is trashed. You can't sleep. Your kitchen doesn't have anything, or it's only organic. And every time you go in the kitchen, you have to read every label and obsess over it being perfect. You know, that's not resource. That's not safe. That's not where the body feels fertile. And so that's my main goal, is I want to switch the culture to see that it's not just, oh, this is a nice thing for your quality of life, or, oh, this will protect your mental health. It's, this is what it means to do fertility treatments, is that we have to see and honor and work on it all. And then the 25% is just so much more doable.
So much more doable. And when we're talking about fertility, the things that can pop up, like jealousy, like your friends mm-hmm. are getting pregnant around you,
yes.
or guilt that you, when you finally do get pregnant and you're not happy.
Oh, I want to talk about that one.
Or you're like, yeah, you're just mm-hmm. like, why am I feeling this way, right? Shame, yeah. Or like all of these negative things pop up and we're like, wait, why am I even feeling that? So then you feel horrible through your pregnancy and you're putting on this, you know,
beating yourself
smile.
Up in a new way. Like, oh gosh, I wanted this and I'm like, supposed to be
just
happy.
It?
Yeah.
What's wrong with me? And then all of a sudden you're getting more and more, susceptible to, you know, fear-induced interventions and and then you're like, do I really need an induction? So I know a lot of women that come in with scheduled elective C-sections because they just don't even want to deal. Yeah. Like, I worked so hard to get here. Just give me my baby. Put my baby in my arms. Skip it all. I've had enough.
And the perceived risk of birth versus a C-section, even though the evidence-based is way more – the perceived is just like it's safe, it's contained, it's known.
Yeah.
That feels really appealing when your lived experience has been the opposite.
When you spend so much money and so much time, I know years of infertility, years. Yeah. I know people have tried 6, 7, 8 cycles. They finally get pregnant and they're like, put the live, healthy baby in my arms now. And then what they don't think about is they know they have their baby, those emotions and that trauma doesn't just go away.
Yeah.
And now you're trying to connect with this baby and you're just like, why am I still not feeling better? Why am I now you're in postpartum depression and you're just like not clicking and now you're having issues with your partner. Now you're talking about let's try for a second.
And we have to do it sooner rather than later. Cause what if it takes 3 years again and I want them closer together, but also let's I want to breastfeed this one.
And I want to hear you. Yeah. I want to hear your take on this story.
So I mean, all of this is yes. And one of my meditation teachers says conditions being what they are, how can it be anything other than what it is? So the first thing that I teach people is radical acceptance of like, you don't have to like it, but how you feel is absolutely an accurate reflection of your lived experience and your set of conditions. So if you've had the other shoe drop over and over and the worst case scenario thing happened and you've fallen on the crappy part of the bell curve over and over and over again, of course you're going to expect that. Of course you're going to think that's going to continue into your pregnancy. It's not just, oh, now we're into a new phase and I've got amnesia about all of that. So I came up with this little idea. I joke that I want to make a self-published like children's book for pregnant people after fertility. But I think of this like little teeter-totter in a park and like, you know, the positive pregnancy test is like a little bunny jumping on it, like you're pregnant. And then you like pan over to the other side and there's like an elephant and a bull and a rhinoceros and like a sheep and a sheepdog all hanging over. Then that's like, that's that ectopic pregnancy. That's all those failed cycles. That's that miscarriage. That's that missed miscarriage where you went in expecting a heartbeat and there wasn't one. And so just getting pregnant is not going to magically offset all that lived experience and to feel guilty that you're guarded or feel guilty that you're not excited is just another layer of unnecessary cultural BS. And if we could be kinder and more realistic and say, until you get past the point where you've ever been the furthest in a pregnancy with a prior loss, until you get to where you're feeling your baby regularly, until you get to where you've got that 20-week scan, you might not have enough on that other side of your teeter-totter for it to tip into the, like, I believe this could happen. And what I see a lot is, you know, I wish I would have felt excited sooner because now I'm 22 weeks and I have to scramble and get ready to have a baby. But it's like, you just can't feel what it doesn't make sense for you to feel. That's not to say just stew and wallow in the negativity, but it's to say if you feel that, then you have to process that and work with it and do therapy and journal and get acupuncture and go for walks and be in nature and do breathing and all the things that can help you sit with that reality in a compassionate, kind, skillful way. And then when your teeter-totter does tip, it's like, oh my gosh, you're gonna have a baby. And then celebrate that authentically. I'm also a big fan of authentic celebration. So maybe on the positive pregnancy test, you can't get excited about having a baby, but you can be excited that implantation happened. And maybe you didn't have any idea that that could have ever happened. Like you've never experienced a positive pregnancy test. So just celebrate that and maybe it's the heartbeat. You just celebrate that. You don't have to fast forward into I'm sending my kid off to college and picturing everything. Because that's not realistic. Yeah.
Right. The what ifs and like, well, what if this doesn't work out? What if I tell everyone and now I have to go through the fear of, you know, telling people that, oh, I had another miscarriage or this one didn't work, or even like the look from your partner, if it does, like we put a lot of weight on ourselves to be the ones to get pregnant and then keep the pregnancy and grow this baby, a healthy baby. It's like it or not, we put it on ourselves to you know, accomplish this miracle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always say exactly what you just said is we have to celebrate the moments, every moment. Like I was celebrating every day that I was trying, right? So I had to consciously do that. I was like, I got up today and I took my temperature. Look, my cycle is getting, you know, now we're at 28 days. It's getting more regular. Look, my basal temperature went up. And then, you know, the negative pregnancies are tests are a bummer. Okay, but I have a whole month to regulate my temperature more, improve my diet, like get how am I feeling? I'm getting feeling really energetic. I'm really happy. Like, I really now looking back did a lot of work on that other 75%. I think because in my head I was like, hey, if this doesn't work out, at least I want to be like the best I can be at 40 years old. Yeah. And, you know, I really wanted to enjoy those moments. I think my age and life experience had a lot to do with it. Yeah. So, you know, not that being 40 means you're not going to feel those ways, but I made a conscious, very conscious effort because the fear was there. It was deep down. It was like, what if this doesn't work? I don't want another miscarriage and loss. And I really had to like put it out of my head a lot. And you know, it's what I find with other women as well is maybe I was very, I was more, educated. I had more experience on birth and labor and delivery and all of that. So I didn't like that alone without all the fertility stuff is overwhelming.
Yeah. It's a double-edged sword, I'm sure.
So yes.
You know, all the ways it can go south. But also way more general information than the
and that was a fear of mine. Yeah. I was like, do I know too much? Like, I'm running down the halls when there's with women that are, you know, hemorrhaging and rupturing. Yeah. Like I've seen everything. Yep. I've seen the stillbirths. I've taken care of the babies after they pass and I'm showing them to mom. Like that touches you and it's there, but it was way more beneficial than, you know, fear inducing. To have that information.
And I think what I'm hearing is, I think you're phrasing, you're using language that feels like I just had to like, you know, not go there. I had to focus on this. And I think that like that is one interpretation, but I would kind of reframe it as it might look the same, but it's being present in the moment, right? It's okay to feel sad when you get your period again. But if you stay in the moment, all of a sudden your estrogen is rising and your BBT chart is looking a little bit better and you're, you know, and like you have these moments where you think of that stillbirth and know how devastating that can be. But then you come back to like, I just felt my baby kick and I know the odds of that. So instead of saying, and it kind of looks the same, but it's just how we frame it. Cause I think culturally one is like, don't do that. And one is do it the realistic amount of the time based on your actual what's happening. And so like, be really sad or be really pissed off or be really jealous or be really scared if there's something happening in that moment. But if in those in the moments that it's not, if you just come back to, I have this saying that I teach people that's, it's like this now. And it's like, okay, if I were to go, it's like this now, right now. It's like I'm sitting on a cushy chair. I'm having a nice conversation with you. It's raining out. I can see, you know, it kind of feels like a pajama day. I'm going to go and give people acupuncture at my clinic on a really cozy day. And it's just like I don't need to be worked up about stuff right now because I feel really safe and okay. So it's that skill set, I think, more than not going there that keeps us more balanced and more realistic.
100%. I remember those moments, right? Like I pee on the stick. It's a negative pregnancy test. I get in the bed, I curl up, and I'm like bummed, you know, and I let myself be upset because that was a really tough month that I just worked hard at. And I really wanted that positive, and I kind of really thought it would be positive. And, you know, you have to allow your, give yourself that grace. And I gave myself that grace to just lay in bed and sulk, you know, for 30 minutes, whatever time. I didn't time it, but I said, but at a certain point it passes and you're like, okay, let's get on with the day. What am I doing? I love that, how you rephrase that. And then, you know, staying in the moment, in the present. Oh, this comforter is really, really comfy now that I'm laying in it. Let me just close my eyes and take a little nap, or let me go talk to some friends about something that has nothing to do with fertility, or, so, you know, we move, we continue on. We have to in life, right? Things are going to come up and that are going to, you know, bum us up or set us back, or we're going to feel bad if my friend says she's pregnant and I'm, you know, just found out I had a miscarriage. I'm, you know, that kind of thing is like, man, and you, I sit with that for a minute and I'm just like, why am I, I'm not like smiling and happy for her. And then I check in and I acknowledge it. And then I look up and I'm like, I'm so happy for you. And I can give her a hug because I genuinely feel that, but you have to allow yourself to feel that way. And sometimes it does creep up and you're like, not right now. Get away.
Well, and there it is too. Like, we expect people just to go back to it. Like, what other kind of loss, even if your pet dies, you know, it's like more people know what to do and how to respond than I had a miscarriage. I went into, I expected to hear the heartbeat and there wasn't one. And now I have to decide if I'm having a surgery or waiting for weeks to see if, you know, it's going to naturally pass, or, and just show up for work and do the meetings and do the things. Or it's a really weird culture that we ask women to just keep going, and there's no right or wrong. Like, some people very much feel better just keep swimming, you know, it's like, just keep going, if I stop it's gonna be, and this is how I handle this. And other people really need to, you know, take a beat and just really curl up for a couple days or for longer, depending on what kind of, what they're processing. So there's no right or wrong way, but just to say, what's realistic? What does it feel like for me? How can I honor that? And how can I not feel bad about that? Like, I'm not wallowing. I'm not being weak. I'm not being, we have all these commentaries for things that are intense and hard, that they're bad somehow in this culture. And I really love Chinese medicine. It's like, it's, there's yin and yang emotions, you know? So there's sadness and there's joy and there's, you know, anger and there's relaxed looseness. And there's, and so we're like little human ping pong tables going back and forth. And it's not like we're like, whenever the ball's over on that half of the table, it's wrong and it's bad and you shouldn't be over there, ball. It's like, no, that's just where it is this moment, and give it a minute. It'll be on the other side and it's going to back and forth. And there's a sort of freedom and permission and grace in that perspective that I don't think we give ourselves. And it can be for not being excited when we're pregnant, or for not having the birth that we wanted, but still having a healthy baby and mom. You know, there's all these examples where we have this both together kind of paradoxical, I'm grateful and I'm really upset. I'm fine and I'm really not okay. I'm, you know, I'm doing it and oh my gosh, I don't think I can do this. So that's another really nice holistic thing, is to just reframe as like, that's how it should be, not just be excited or just be glad that you survived.
Like, you're feeling any negative emotion and you're like, I shouldn't be feeling this.
Yeah. And it's, I just have not a baby. True. And it's like, well,
but I should be happy. How do we open up the lines of communication to get support from our partner then? Because they're going through it too. They may be feeling the same way and not showing it, or totally like happy and going on the merry way, where you're just like, man, and then you don't want to ruin their parade. And so you don't even bring it up. And now you're living in your head.
Yeah.
I feel it's so important to open up that line of communication, but how can we do it in a way that, and maybe this isn't your expertise, but I'm sure you speak with a lot of your clients that have these issues with their partner, and they're like, they're not on, they don't understand. Like, maybe we can just touch on how we can open up that conversation with them so that they'll, besides sending them this podcast.
Yep. I'll do a shameless plug. I have a on my YouTube, there's a video about tipping the stress scales, and that one's really good for couples. I'll send you the link so you can put it in the description. But the way that I teach this, I have it in multiple videos and I teach it in person all the time, is that if you think about the scales of justice or scales of injustice in this case, on one side goes all the things that you that feel stressful and bad and intense. And some of it's fertility, some of it's pregnancy, some of it's birth, some of it's postpartum, depending on where you're at. But then there's just like world stuff, work stuff, traffic stuff, mother-in-law stuff, you know, all the stuff. And so you're going to
other kids
stuff, lack of support for parenting, lack of paternity leave and, you know, partner leave and all these things, right? So we have all these things and yes, you and your partner are kind of looking at this, a similar set of scales, and they're most closely aligned with your scales. But like I said, oftentimes the person with the ovaries, the person that's growing the human or giving birth to the human or feeding the human exclusively, is like, I have to be calm because everything I'm doing is going into this other being and I'm failing. And so now we've taken that scale that's really tipped towards stressed and tipped it even further because now we're failing. And what the person... generally the person with the penis, the person that's the partner, is like, no, this is fine. We're doing it. And then they're denying that the scales suck. And so now all of a sudden one person is stressed about their stress or feeling guilty about having their feelings. One person is denying reality, which is quite stressful to a nervous system. And then the person that you're supposed to be in it with is on a really different page. So now we've just tipped it in 2-3 more increments towards more stressed out. So the thing that I have people do is see that and then have a conversation about, like, do we have control over anything on this scale? Like, we're super sleep deprived. I was just talking with a person who I supported her through multiple IVFs and got pregnant with her last embryo and has her baby, and the baby just was not sleeping. And so she's like, well, we each sleep like 2 hours a couple times. And I'm like, no, that is not okay health-wise. We have to figure out, like, that is going to tip your scales into real bad places really fast. And so for them, looking at their scales, getting some sleep and figuring out how to do shifts and how to do that was the biggest thing for them to tip their scales and take something that was really heavy and weighing them down off. So thinking about that together as a team, troubleshooting, doing it from different angles, you know, pitching in different ways, that can build a connection and get people on the same page. And then also there's this whole other side of, actually, let me go back. There's a whole bunch that you don't control over there. Like, having a newborn is hard. The growth, the learning curve is insane, and you're physically healing and it's just wild. So compassion. So you work on the things that you can together and you tag team it, and then you sit there and you're compassionate. Like, this is hard. This is intense. This baby can't tell us what they need, and they need a lot of stuff. And we're trying to figure out how to learn the cues, and my hormones are all over the place. And so compassion. And then the third step is looking at the other side of the scale, where you can look at it and say, like, hey, we should go for a walk. Hey, we should put, instead of trying to clean and catch up on laundry, we just need to, like, lay on the couch and snuggle and put on a show that we like and laugh. Or, hey, I think I do need to supplement because I am just going crazy trying to do 100% exclusive breasts, and I'm going to burn out and give up entirely unless I can get more moderate and reframe this. And so all these things.
Or I need a maid to come in and clean.
I need to do it. A postpartum doula. I'm going to say yes to that meal train instead of feeling bad about it, or all the things. So this gives a lot of really concrete logistical ways to build that connection. And you don't have to feel the same way. Like, one person might be on the happy side and the other I loved that my husband and I were constantly in the middle of the night on the opposite sides of the ping pong table, because I'd wake up and I'd be like, this is not okay. This is something is wrong. And he's like, I think this is just how it is. We're doing it. It's okay. We're doing it right. And then fast forward 2 nights later, he's like, this is not okay. And I'd be like, no, we're doing great. Like, I love you. We're doing
it. We really need two of us.
It makes me, people that are single parents for any reason, it's another layer for that situation too, because it is, it's a blessing and a curse when you don't feel like you're on the same page with a partner, but at least sometimes they balance each other out too. So lots of paradoxes.
I think it's really valuable to first have an honest look about what you need, what you truly need. And even if it is, I need to lay on the couch and watch TV for like two, 3 hours and do nothing. And I need you to cuddle me. Can you please make dinner tonight? Yeah. Or, you know, you really, because you know, you can't do one more thing. How can you clean up your own personal house? And like in your head, and then communicate those needs because your partner is most likely not going to be able to predict what you need or read.
Not
your
a mind reader.
If you can't even, if you don't even know what you need, how are they going to,
fair,
a miracle,
fair,
you know?
Just understand. Yeah. I remember telling my husband when he went back to work after 2 weeks and I had a hemorrhage and I was emergency transported and, you know, we have zero family around and he went back to work and I was like, if you don't peel that egg before you leave, I will not eat today. Like, there's no way I am going to peel an egg and take care of this baby who didn't ever sleep and wanted to nurse for 2 to 3 hours at a time. So yeah, it is. And also I'll say this is, I was just talking about this to a newlywed in the context of just relationships, but I heard this advice from my friend Leah, who's another acupuncturist and is lovely. She at my baby shower, she grabbed my shoulders and she's like, Nicole, look at me, eye contact now. And I was like, oh, Leah. And she's like, let Mark, it's my husband, do things. Do not jump in. Do not think just because you can do it faster or better and you have more experience that you should do it, because he will never get faster or better if you constantly jump in because you're already faster and better. And maybe the diaper blows out. Maybe it's a total fail, but she's like, walk out the door, go sit on the stoop, go walk around the block, do whatever you need to do to not insert yourself, because that's the only way. And it makes sense, right? Most of us that are more femme identifying have probably like caregiven more than people that aren't, babysitting and taking classes. Now it's more gender neutral with my kids' generation, but like babysitting classes and taking care of cousins and doing stuff. So yeah, we probably do know how to put on a diaper better. We probably do know how to get the onesie on and get them undressed to get ready for a bath faster and stuff like that. But that's not to say that we shouldn't let them get better at it. And so it kind of caused a lot of stress at first. I'm like, you have to do this. I'm going in the other room. But it was great. It was really, really worth it to say, I shouldn't carry all the load. And if I just insert myself, I will end up doing that.
Yeah. And set expectations before you get to that point. Start speaking with them like, hey, so you do baths in this night and then I will do the feeding, and then you do the feeding at 5 a.m. so I can sleep 6 hours. Like, make a plan and set some expectations, whether they know how to do it or not. Get a sense of their willingness to do these things. Some of them are like, no, that's your task. I'm like, no. We have to do this together. I need some help. So you, and some people just need you to list it out. Like, to make me like happy immediately, I love clean sheets on the bed. Like, if I had a rough day and I get in the bed and he changed the sheets, forget about
love
it.
Love language.
Like, I know that, I know what I love. So you have to kind of like write it out, put it on the, like, communicate it. That way you set your expectations with them. So then when you are in that moment and you're like, he's not doing the bath and, you know, you're not like blowing up at him and he's like, whoa, I had no idea. You've been doing the bath for the last 2 weeks. You jump in when I want to do it. You're doing the bath. And I'm like, no, I want you to want to do it. And I just need it has to be that set of expectations and a conversation, right?
Yeah, I think that's very true. And and then they can learn, like, maybe I don't always have to talk about the sheets. But after a while, it's like, okay, that's a really heavy hitting thing. I could change the sheets. So
and talk about
and
their
versa.
Struggles, right?
Exactly.
How are they feeling about, maybe they're having really like stress about finances, that they've taken out loans, or they've had to borrow money from family, or they're working double shifts, you know, for whatever reason, and they're sleep deprived and they're scared, but they're trying to put up a brave front for you because they know that, well, she just gave birth, or she's pregnant. So allowing them to release yeah. in a safe space. And then it's going to more than likely allow you to also, mm-hmm. because they're going to reciprocate that. And maybe it will be on a nice gingerly walk around the neighborhood without your cell phones. And, you yeah. know, you have to talk. There's yeah. no TV. So you're kind of like forced to say,
you can triangulate out.
Yeah. So how are you doing with this? And then bring it up like it's a normal, like, yeah, you know, I know the loan stuff. And he's like, yeah, I'm really stressed. And just let him vent and
yeah.
and see where he's at so that you can come from a place of compassion too. It's not always Absolutely. Just about us. And then you can do it both ways, right?
I have a whole blog post about partner, like Nothing I Do Helps. It's called, I think, on my blog. And it's, you know, they're engendered. Partners are largely engendered to provide and to fix and to be strong. And if those aren't actually the things that are helpful or they're not doable, it's going to make them feel real bad about their self-worth and their purpose. And it's going right. to feel like a big disconnect, and it's going to feel so calling out those cultural harmful things too, and being like, I don't expect you to fix this. I just want you to be in it with me. I just want you to let me be overwhelmed. I just want you to let me cry in the middle of the night if, you know, I don't know how breastfeeding is going. So those things,
and your bond will be so much stronger yeah. that way, instead of splitting up, which will just create more struggle and yeah. friction for you, especially with a newborn.
Yeah.
And then thinking about another pregnancy and going mm-hmm. through the whole thing.
Yep.
No. I want to touch before we end on, yeah. and if you still have some time for me, but I want to just touch, because I'm so involved with birth itself.
Yeah.
How, when we go through fertility and IVF specifically, how that may open the door to more interventions, more mm-hmm. recommendations, more fear-based, you know, protocols from your provider, and how yeah. would you navigate those? And we can just end on that topic, but yeah. I just want to really talk. I just find it so interesting yeah. because I do get a lot of patients that are like, oh, I had IVF. So we spoke risk. About it earlier, just mm-hmm. a little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, I know yeah. before we started recording, you started talking about that too, like the actual physiological parts of it that
yep. may yeah. actually there are real it. Factors. And, you know, when you're like geriatric pregnancy and IVF and, you know, subfertility leading to IVF, there are factors, and we don't, because we don't know, we haven't researched it long enough to. And because fertility treatments change so quickly, even, you know, the oldest IVF baby is my age, I'm 47, and how they did IVF is so different than how they do IVF now. So to say, oh, what are the long-term implications for IVF? It's like, well, totally different medications, totally different protocols, totally different kinds of situations, cultures, all the things. So, you know, it's all sort of observation-based, but there are more complications, and IVF and subfertile, so trying for more than a year to get pregnant and not having been pregnant, are associated with increased risks in pretty much all of the categories. So from stillbirth to preeclampsia to gestational diabetes to placenta previa to intrauterine growth restriction. I alluded to this already, but a lot of these, not all of them, but a lot of them we're now seeing, because we're studying placentas for the first time in the last decade, that the placenta function and the umbilical cord function, of course, sets up a lot of how the baby can grow and get what they need or not. And then that will make different dominoes of kind of things happen in the body. For example, like preeclampsia, we used to think was just a random glitch, right? Now we're seeing if the placenta can't get what it needs, or the umbilical cord can't get what it needs to the baby, you're going to jack the blood pressure up to force more through. You're going to thin the blood to get more through. You're going to break down protein to get more to the baby. And so that's actually like a wisdom trying to get what we need to get through that placenta. So it seems to be that one of the biggest ways that IVF and subfertility influence the outcomes of a pregnancy are through the placenta maybe not being as robust as it might be in a spontaneous, easier conception. And we don't know if that's because of the nature of the underlying 25% of pathology Some of it is probably that. We don't know if it's the nature of the treatment itself. Some of the different growth cultures that are used in the labs for embryology have been linked to different changes. Some of the ways that we prep the lining for the embryo to implant. For example, for a long time, they would just shut down the woman's body and then use entirely outside hormone replacement therapy to build up, so add estrogen to build up the lining. Once it gets to the right thickness, add the progesterone as to mimic like you would have ovulated. And now you've got estrogen and progesterone, and then time it where you put the embryo in that prepared uterus in the lining. And then we started saying, well, what if we just followed a natural cycle for people that have natural cycles that are pretty reliable? And we just synced up and we did the embryo transfer with your natural cycle. And what we saw at first was that the pregnancy rate was pretty much identical. There was no statistical difference, but the live birth rates and the level of complications were statistically significantly lower with the cycles that use the endogenous, the body's own hormones, versus shutting those down and using something from the outside. So there's probably something inherent in the manipulation and the process. There's probably something, some percentage, that's the pathology. And so we don't want to poo-poo the idea that, no, this is, now you're pregnant, it's the same. Just look at evidence-based birth and whatever the study says for the general pregnancy is the same. But we also don't want to be fear-driven and scarcity-driven. And we want to insist on the best information that we have. And so it's usually somewhere in between the really interventionistic and the really trust the body kind of place, with a lot of informed consent, with a lot of context and education, so that the person, even if it ends up being a complication in either direction, feels like they were empowered and they were informed and they were a part of that decision making and that process and really supported. Because it is, it's a very high stakes situation to be in, especially when you've worked so hard to have a baby. So yeah, I love to start with the evidence-based stuff, but then understand that that's often not specific to subfertility and IVF, and then start having conversations. And then doulas and good person-centered, education-focused, informed consent-based providers, and all the mental health and all the stuff that we've been talking about with the other 75%, all make it that much better.
Right. It's evaluating your options. Mm-hmm. The evidence that we have now, knowing that it's pretty fresh and things are always changing, your own situation, how many cycles did you have to go through before it did stick? What is your lifestyle like right now? How are you feeling in your heart? Did you have a vaginal birth before? Mm-hmm. Are you in acupuncture every week or month? How is your diet? What's your genetics and
what's the
morbidities?
And
monitoring. There's a lot to look at.
There's a lot of extra,
growing?
Yeah, yeah.
If you're growing appropriately, there's a good amount of fluid.
Yep. And of course, some of those can be tricky too, but knowing the evidence on what is that fluid measurement telling us or not telling us, or what is the guess for the baby's size telling us or not telling us. Mm-hmm. And I will say,
to scale,
I've been doing this 18 years. And so I've seen a lot of pregnancies, a lot of people coming back for subsequent, trying to get pregnant again, getting pregnant either with intervention again or without. And my patient population doesn't have the same level of complications. And I think that's because they're doing the 75-25, right? Like, there is still 25% that is probably inherent in that population, but there's a lot that's coming from the 75%. And so if we can say, okay, let's put our attention there, and then however things unfold with informed consent and good education and support, that's a beautiful birth. And like, I feel like I really did that with my births. And even though I had what I think a lot of people would find a pretty traumatic birth experiences, I was like on cloud nine after both my, and I lost more than half the blood in my body very quickly. It was the most severe home birth hemorrhage my midwives had seen. And I had some really great midwives and emergency transport. And they kept coming and checking on me at home. And how are you doing, Nicole? Have you cried today? Are you feeling overwhelmed? And I don't know, day three or something, I'm like, I did cry a little bit today. And they're like, okay, tell us. And I was like, I was just looking at that Japanese print on my wall and it's just so beautiful and I'm so happy that I'm alive. And they're like, okay, okay. And part of that is I won the oxytocin lottery, you know, like I didn't get to control that. But also I had that 75% in the bigger perspective. And I really truly felt like I hemorrhaged for lots of reasons and that's not on me. I didn't fail. And I felt really served and really safe and really like I had a beautiful birth, even though that happened to me. So all the more reason to do the 75% in the fertility journey, in the pregnancy journey, around birth, postpartum, because it just sets you up to be able to have that perspective and those reframes so that whatever hard stuff happens, you're going to be able to have more tools and more framework to relate to it in healthier ways.
Yeah. You do not even think about the nursery until you have set up your house and your backyard. Yeah. And it's a lovely place to live. It's a wonderful foundation that can get you through the storms.
Yep.
And then when you focus on that nursery, it's going to be way less stressful. And it's most likely going to be more productive. And even if the nursing never comes into fruition, you're going to have a beautiful house and a backyard to be grateful for. And that's what is really going to carry you through parenthood.
Yeah.
Because these kids we've been fighting to have are going to become teenagers.
Like, or just really hard newborns. Really opinionated toddlers.
Hard it's all toddlers. It's and then they're slamming doors in your face. And you're like, do you know what I did to have you? Like,
you should be happy all the time.
But
and so should I.
Right. We have that dream of that family. And then there, our kids are having kids. And like, that's what we do, right? And but if we're not setting up that 75%, I love that.
Yeah.
Then it's gonna be a lot harder than it needs to be. So that's such a valuable tip to leave us with. It's a huge tip. It's life-changing, honestly. And I subscribe to it. So it's wonderful. Please, Nicole, let us know where we can find you and more of these just valuable tips that you got.
I'm a big fan of education and context. So I have tons of content on my website, which is lifehealinglife.com. And that's as opposed to doctor fixing patient, life healing life. And I have a tab that's online education. I've got freebies. I've got paid courses. I've got a giant YouTube channel, a big blog, a weekly newsletter. I love teaching. I love inspiring. I love reframing. So even if you can never work with me, there's just so much that I think people can get great acupuncture in many places. Clearly your acupuncture sounds lovely, but these ideas, this is I think I'm pioneering these ideas as far as I know. And I really do. By the time I retire, I want to have changed fertility culture so that the ratios are right and we're actually serving women and families and our world in a better way versus just like whatever we have to do to get a baby to move in the nursery and then put your life back together afterwards. So thank you for this opportunity and thank you for all the evidence-based work that you're doing because I am so excited to share this episode with my pregnant after fertility struggles people and have them have all your other episodes to look into too.
Thank you so much. I love it too. I love just having these kinds of conversations. I don't know so much teaching, but I love learning.
Yeah,
I love teaching, I guess. Like as soon as you learn something and you know how valuable it is, you want to share it.
Fires
so
you up.
having these kinds of conversations and posting them out for everyone to listen to, like while you're talking, I'm literally like, I'm so excited I'm like thinking of the people that I want to share it with and promote it.
Like, I was walking my dog this morning, listening to your last episode. And like, oh my gosh, this person needs to hear this. I'm gonna do to add it to a blog post. So yes, it takes a village for
it does.
All of this.
It's a full community, and we're such strong women, and we have strong partners, and we are capable, and we can do this together. We're not an island. And what I don't know, someone else will know, and what someone else doesn't know, I may know, and that can be an expert in the field, but it can also just be another mom that went through it, or your own mother, or you know, it just.
Yep.
That's how we do generational education, passing stories along and sharing that so that we're not walking into birth with 100% full trust in our doctor without actually even hearing their values and what they were, where they're coming from. And they're just like, oh, IVF. Okay. Well, this is why I think we're going to do this.
This week we do this. Yep.
Yes. And I'm like, okay. And we're not even, you know, we're so focused on the eating the right, taking the right supplements and doing all the things for that nursery. So being able to open up our minds and be like, just take the weight off of your shoulders. We are all here to support you and to get you through the journey together. And imagine going through all of this, who you're going to help later on with your own stories as you share.
So, that is so true.
Thank you so, so much.
Total joy and pleasure. Likewise.
And for coming on. Have a wonderful day. Bye.
You too.
Thank you for listening to My Friend's a Nurse presents the Birthing Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode and found it valuable. Before we go, a quick reminder. The information shared on this podcast is for educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. Always consult with your healthcare provider for any medical concerns or questions. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe, leave a review, and share it with your friends. Your support helps us reach more people and continue to bring you great content. Until next time, stay healthy and stay informed.